This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Shall we begin?
Expecto Patronum!
It is 7:39 and this is Popcorn Culture. I'm Lee Chui Lin. As you might be able to tell, I'm calling in from home. And in the studio, we have Arvind Yuvaraj. And sitting in for Sharmila Ganesan today, we have Dashrin Johan. And together, we are all talking today about creature features, which is why we started off with one of the best movie themes of all time.
Yeah, so like literally 10 minutes before the show went on air, me and Dash were talking and we realized that we don't actually know what constitutes as a creature feature anymore because there were lots of like suggestions coming in. One of our colleagues even suggested Monsters, Inc. Daryl, who hosts The Pulse, he said Monsters, Inc., is that a creature feature?
And both of us just started cracking up.
Yeah. And we were like, is Doraemon a creature feature because it's an alien cat?
So is cat dog a creature feature? The cartoon cat dog.
Yeah, cat dog is a creature feature. So now all of a sudden, I have no idea what a creature feature is because everything is a creature feature if you think about it. Everything sci-fi is a creature feature.
I guess logically speaking, right? Like I think that the way that the show is going to go, I suspect, is that we are going to be talking about the traditional idea of what a creature feature is, which is to say that it is a movie that has a monster, a creature of some kind that drives the plot or that the whole movie is fundamentally in some way about. And we're also going to be talking about the other stuff. Is cat dog a creature feature? I think cat dog is more like a surrealist creation that defies categorization. I don't know if I want to categorize it at all.
Yeah, and that's the thing, right? It became because yesterday when I was just thinking about what to talk about during this show, I was a bit initially when we say creature feature, you know, my mind automatically goes to perhaps Godzilla, King Kong, these are the things that your mind goes to automatically. But then I was like, so here's the thing, right? If those are the only things we are talking about, I am generally not a fan of creature features. Because of course there are outliers that I really enjoy, but generally I don't seem to connect with those, giant monsters destroying buildings type of movies. But then when I just started thinking more, is District 9 a creature feature? Yeah. It's all these, like you mentioned, sci-fis, weird films, perhaps films where the creatures are, in the background, they may not be the central characters of the film. Mm. And then, my gears started spinning because I think that, there's so many options, so many great ones.
Yeah. I mean, even like, I think as long as you have some sort of being that you cannot explain, it's a creature feature. Like District 9 is a perfect example of creature feature. We'll also bring up Shape of Water slightly later on in the show. But yeah, those kinds of creature feature in the typical sense, I guess.
I think so. And I also think that it's why we're seeing different types of creature features succeed. I mean, if you talk about things like Shape of Water, it was a success, relatively speaking. It was a huge critical darling. And then you look at what they've been trying to do with the whole Kong franchise, right? We're trying to create this whole King of Monsters thing. And because everything has to be a franchise now, to try and build Mothra, just introducing all these different things in the hopes that it will relive that old excitement for these types of movies. But I think maybe that we want more. I mean, I was thinking about this in the context of stuff like Jaws and King Kong. Mm. And I think that we are at a point now in cinema where, because we can create anything, we are no longer as amazed by spectacle. I mean, if you look at 1933's King Kong, which is a clip that we're going to be hearing in a little bit, King Kong is stop motion animated. It's kind of amazing, but we can now go past that. I mean, you can just give Andy Serkis 30 minutes and he can you know, be any ape you want him to be. And so I do think that maybe some of that sense of spectacle and mystery is a little bit gone from the creature feature, unlike, say, movie-going audiences in the 30s or 50s or 60s.
And I think that is a fantastic point, because that is exactly why over the years I don't seem to be attached to these typical creature features, you know, in a traditional sense, because we've seen so many of them. Yep. You know, we've seen buildings crashing to the ground. We've seen giant monsters, to the point where, you know, especially people who grew up in our era, you know, when, you know, when CGI and all started becoming better and better. So, you know, the sheer spectacle of it isn't enough anymore, because we need more. Perhaps maybe, you know, 50 years ago, like you mentioned, Lynn, in the 30s, 40s, 50s, and when they first did it, you know, the spectacle was was the hook, because that is why people wanted to watch the film. It's something they have never seen before. Whereas for us, where we grew up with these sort of things, now we want something more. Perhaps, you know, I think one of the great reasons why Jaws was a huge success was because the creature was barely shown.
Yeah.
Right? It was such a, people are, until today, are so scared to go into the water because they are afraid that a shark is going to come and bite them or eat them up. But when you watch the film, Jaws, the shark is barely even there.
Yeah. So you don't know, like, how big is the shark? You look at the fin and you're trying to guess, like, how big is this thing actually, like, in the water? You know, what is the size of this beast, right? There's also, I think spectacle is one of it, but I also think that CGI cannot replicate the texture of actual creatures. Like, we spoke about Alien on Tuesday, and Alien has a texture to it that CGI just cannot achieve.
We said the word gross like six times.
We said gross six times because it is just so, it's so slimy and it's so weird. And I think when you put that through CGI, there's something in our brains that tells us that it's not real. Whereas when you see someone in a suit and you see that sort of practical effects, it looks like an actual creature that can reach out and touch you and harm you and hurt you in a way. And I think that works. Same for Jaws, same for Jurassic Park, because of, you know, they built the actual dinosaurs and stuff. But also going back to Jaws again, it's if I think the shark was in CG, like what is that movie that came out with Samuel L. Jackson that was like Jaws but wasn't Jaws? Deep Blue Sea.
Deep Blue Sea, yes. With the super hyper smart shark.
Yeah. So that didn't work. I don't think lots of people got attached to Deep Blue Sea the same way we got attached to Jaws.
Yeah.
There is totally that. I think there's also the fact of National Geographic, Planet Earth, like to a certain degree, the mystery of animals, or the idea that maybe there's going to be a kraken or, you know, some mega lion that we just haven't discovered, that has somewhat dissipated. And then that's why they keep trying to up the ante on creating creatures, right? Which is something that we'll get to shortly. So we're about to be diving into the best of their form. I think maybe Cat Dog has had its day in this show. I'm just going to say that now. We're not talking about Cat Dog anymore. Okay, so after this, we're going to be diving into the best of the best of creature features, and also maybe some of the ones that didn't really work for us. But as always, we want to hear from you. You know, do you think Jaws, King Kong, Godzilla, like, are these your favorites? Do creature features work for you in any way? Talk to us. WhatsApp 018-789-8899. You can call 773-2900. You can also, of course, tweet us at BFM Radio. Now, here is a little snippet of a creature that has had many, many outings on the silver screen. It's King Kong.
We're millionaires, boys. I'll share it with all of you. Why, in a few months, it'll be up in lights on Broadway. Kong, the eighth wonder of the world!
Denim. The airplane's got it.
Oh, no. It wasn't the airplanes. It was beauty killed the beast.
Beauty killed the beast. break from mediocrity. BFM 89.9.
Westridge!
How dare you? It was you who brought that snake. You brought the devil.
There's a devil inside everyone.
Get your hands off her.
Horrible. Westridge! Take my gear up to the pilot house.
How dare you presume to order me about?
Presume? Why you like I presume to throw you in the river? You like that presume? Huh? Everyone else,
go back.
Don't move.
BFM 89.9, it is 7:50, and you're listening to Popcorn Culture with Lynn, Arvin, and Dash. And today we're talking about creature features, or movies that feature a creature. What am I saying? Movies that are driven by a monster, a creature, something beyond our reckoning that isn't human. And so we've heard a little bit of Jaws, a bit of King Kong. Those are kind of the heavy hitters. And then Arvin wanted to talk about Anaconda, so I'm going to leave that to you.
So just to be clear, the creature in Anaconda is John Voight, not the actual Anaconda. Because if you look at the way that performance alone is frightening.
It's true.
Yeah, it is horrific in so many ways. And he's the actual creature in that creature feature. No, but I wanted to bring up Anaconda because I think Anaconda is responsible for like a whole phase of really cheap knockoff creature features because it made a lot of money at the box office. And then it was like semi-practical effects, semi-CGI. It did a lot of new things, but it gave birth to a whole late 90s to mid 2000s bunch of creature features that were cheap to make, but made a lot of money in the cinemas. Like you have like Lake Placid, you have, I think Tarantula came out after that. There was Bats. I think Bats came out after Anaconda. So that was another thing.
I have a secret love for all the Piranha movies. I think they're so awful and I love them so much.
I love Anaconda. So that's the thing. I can watch Anaconda like any day of the week, but it is such a trash movie. It's so bad in like every way. But I think it created the formula that told Hollywood that you can make these cheap creature features for a lot less money and it will still do well in the box office. And Anaconda itself is a franchise. It has like Blood Orchid and a bunch of others, like up to Anaconda 6, I think.
Yeah, and what's interesting about Anaconda, right? Because there's a difference between a film like Anaconda, which we know is trash, and a bad film. Anaconda is trash, but it's not boring. I think that's what I'm trying to get at. There's not a single second of it that is boring, that is a drab, that you're, you know, looking at your time and just wondering, what am I doing? It's like you mentioned, you can watch it any time of the day. It's one of those movies that you can put on, just like the Piranha movies that Lynn brought up. You know, if you're having lunch and, you know, if you're, you know, channel surfing Astro or something and Anaconda is up and it's already 45 minutes in, you're going to watch it till the end.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. 100%.
So I wanted to talk about the fact that I think that creature features kind of, for me anyway, I'm not speaking for everyone else, but for me, they broadly fall into two categories. So my favorite are the Piranha Anaconda type. So one category where it is exactly what you said, Dash. I can just put them on, doesn't matter. My brain switches off and the fun centers are like, ooh, look at this, so much blood. There's that. And they're not scary in the way that horror movies are. So I can just sit back and enjoy. And then the others are the ones that are about something or where they use the monster in a way that, you know, the monster represents something else, which I guess all the Godzilla movies fall into. King Kong is a real tragic figure, for instance. When he's done well, it's great. So I think for me anyway, there are like two very, very broad categories and they're quite distinct from one another. So I don't believe that Anaconda, for example, is in the same category as what we're going to talk about later, District 9.
And I think like all creature features sort of appeal to our, and I don't mean this in a bad way, but the sort of dumb film fan in everyone, or most creature features. And it appeals to the film fan that wants just very basic surface level cinema.
The traditional type of creature features, right?
Like when you watch, going back to like Anaconda or Lake Placid or something, I don't, like you said, you can just switch off your brain. And I think that works for like a lot of people. Yes, even if you go to the cinema, you pay a ticket, it's like a weekend or whatever, you want to sit there. Sometimes you just want to have fun watching a movie, and these movies are fun.
Yes.
They have no quality, and I don't think they're going for quality, but they are fun at the end of the day. And I think that appeal is like really, really important when you're making a creature feature.
And, you know, it's funny you bring that up, right? Because that's largely what I feel as well. Mm. But then even within this category of, you know, schlocky summer nonsense.
Pulpy
stuff. Even within that, there are some that are earnestly, genuinely good. They're not great. They're not masterpieces or anything like that. They're not going to win an Oscar. But a film like Crawl, for example, comes to mind, came out like I think last year or two years ago, perhaps. And it's just this film where on the surface, if I tell you what it is, you know, a girl and a father gets stuck in their house because it's like there's a tornado
and flood,
things like that. And suddenly like these alligators and giant crocodiles come and, you know, they have to survive. So it sounds ridiculous. It's like one of those, you know, piranha movies and anaconda movies where you just have to survive. But when you watch it, it's executed pretty well, that you are really hooked and that it's so thrilling from start to finish.
So we've been asking you for your favorites. We're going to get to ours, I think, peppered throughout the show, but we want to know what your favorite creature features are, or for that matter, if you hate them and you want to tell us why. We also want to hear that. You can call 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio. Arvin, what we got?
Yeah, so this comes from a very familiar Shamila Ganesan, who says that... she says, gremlins, the contrast of the adorable gizmo being able to pop out those gross gremlins and the awesome 80s vibe. We also have a few WhatsApp. So this comes from Zaidi, who says, don't forget Jeepers Creepers, the most underrated creature feature. We have one from, this is from Adlin, who says that John Carpenter's The Thing brought me nightmares when I was a kid. And D asks, does Ninja Turtles count?
Okay. I just want to say, so although I'm hardly on the show, one of the things I love about listening to Supercut is how it always, you know, ends up becoming this, you know, Pandora's box just opens.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like how Arvin will say Lord of the Rings is a war film and Michael Bay is, you know, brought up in the most influential directors of all time conversation. Mm-hmm. And now we have Ninja Turtles in the creature feature conversation. Awesome.
Because why not, right? I mean, they're humanoid turtles.
Yeah.
And there's a rat.
I feel like we are editing the Wikipedia entry on air. Like even right now, if that exists, we're just like busy going, nah, throw it out. I do think Ninja Turtles kind of counts, but I will say that I think that when the creature can speak English or can speak whatever language the movie is in, and it's sort of humanoid, that kind of takes it away, which is why Monsters, Inc., for example, to go back to that, kind of doesn't count. Although I will say that, Arvin, earlier when you talked about Anaconda kind of spawning off its own series of similar movies, right? I think Gremlins kind of falls into that category of comedic horror creature features. Bringing up Gremlins reminds me of Tremors. Does anybody remember that?
Tremors,
and it's in that same category.
I think even Snakes on a Plane is in that same bracket as Gremlins.
Yes.
And Snakes on a Plane is a good creature feature. So bad, but good.
Yes, it's another one where, you know, it's super, super fun.
Yeah.
It's hilarious, not necessarily for the right reasons, but once you start watching, you're just hooked.
Super schlocky.
Yep.
I wonder how many examples are going to be coming from which decade. I think at the end of it, it'll be an interesting exercise to kind of like divvy it up and see where the answers are coming from, simply because I don't know how many are going to be the new ones. And speaking of that, we're about to go into another clip, which is from that same era where, for some reason, suddenly everybody decided that let's just put a reptile near some people and see what happens. So we're about to hear a little bit of Lake Placid. Again, though, keep those ideas coming. Our door is open. Anything that you consider a creature feature, we want to hear about it. WhatsApp 018-789-8899. Call us at 7733-2900. And you can, of course, also tweet us at BFM Radio.
What is she doing?
What?
10 feet into the
Bodacious, Fabulous Minds. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
Come on. We gotta get out of here. Now, right now. Go. Let's go. Hey. Start the engine.
must go faster.
Think they'll have that on the tour?
BFM 89.9, it is 8:08 and you're listening to Popcorn Culture with Lynn, Arvin and Dash. And together we are talking about Creature Features. And I just, that clip makes me so happy because it has so much. It's Maximum T-Rex. You've got a great Laura Dern scream and you have, Ian Malcolm being, you know, whatever it is, the Dr. Ian Malcolm is.
And John Williams at the back.
Oh yes. And we wanted to play a little bit of that because, like we said, we're talking about Creature Features and Jurassic Park is many things. It is an excellent sci-fi movie. It is an excellent action movie. It moved the bar. We've talked about it fairly recently. It moved the bar on effects. But it's also a fantastic creature feature. There are so many creatures and they're all sort of signature beings.
Yeah, I think you can. The clip we just played, I think you can use it as a template. Like, if anyone wants to make a creature feature, it has to check all those boxes. It has to have weird roars from something that you haven't heard before. You have to have people screaming, for sure. Fast cars trying to get away from the thing that's chasing you. And I think
bit
if you...
A bit of humor.
And a charismatic lead. And I think if you check all those boxes, you have, like, the perfect creature feature. So use Jurassic Park as a template. I think it'll work for anyone.
Except Jurassic Park... Sequels used Jurassic Park as a template and it didn't quite work out.
Yeah. Especially the third one.
Yeah, definitely.
This is a very fair point. So we've been asking you for your favorites or, creature features that you love or hate. And before we get into the next section where we really want to talk about, I guess, different sorts of creature features, the ones that aren't necessarily about what they seem to be about, we still wanted to hear from you. So, Arvin, what have people been saying?
Yeah, so over on Twitter, Darren says, anyone remembers Ben, that killer rat movie with the titular song, theme song sung by Michael Jackson?
I do.
You do?
Or rather, I heard the song first, and then when I found out what it was about, I've just never been able to go back.
So is Stuart Little a creature feature?
Guys, we've been through this, all right?
Sean says the first Pacific Rim is one of the few creature feature movies that you can watch over and over and over, although the second movie wasn't as good, but I'm hoping there will be a third. Pacific Rim is a good suggestion. It's a good creature feature.
And made by, you know, one of the best directors in terms of creature features, right? You know, Guillermo del Toro.
Yeah. He knows his creatures.
Definitely.
Yeah. Captain Arriva says, Gremlins is one of my favorite creature features. We have one from Cameroon who says, creature features for me is like Critters, The Thing, those with creepy creatures. And then we have this from Dennis who asks, does A Quiet Place count as a creature feature?
Yes, it does. And it's one of my favorite movies of the decade. Mm-hmm. You know, I still remember, going to the cinema for the first time and watching it. And it's not a perfect film, but it's one of the most unique cinematic experiences I've ever had in my life. It was executed so brilliantly, the way they use silence to create tension and drama, to the point where I swear everyone in the cinema was so afraid to even munch their popcorn loudly.
The M&Ms and all.
Yeah. And like there was this one point where like someone dropped their handphone and, you know, it usually, you know, you are able to hear these sort of things, but it's not very prominent.
Yeah.
But because of how quiet, pin drop silent the cinema was, when you heard that and everyone in the cinema, the energy, like we were certain that the creatures in A Quiet Place are going to come into the cinema hall. And it was wonderful.
So this is kind of the creature features that really, really float my boat, right? Like the ones that I love in the past. So things like Jaws and Jurassic Park. You could argue that they're about other things, right? Interfering with science or, you know, man versus nature and all that. But also fundamentally, they really are so much to do with the thing itself, the monster, the being, whatever it is. But then when you think about stuff like A Quiet Place, it's actually using the monsters to make a statement or to kind of as almost as an excuse to make a certain type of movie. So to that point about how A Quiet Place drives tension, the way that it chooses to tell its story, that is a function of the monster that they chose to put in it. But when you see them, it's not as if you're actually like, oh, this is the worst thing. It's not a xenomorph kind of horror. You don't have that same effect. It's more the breaking of the tension that the silence has been building up to.
And I think like A Quiet Place uses the Jaws template better than Godzilla did. So when the first new Godzilla came out, I think that was 2014. The whole concept was that you don't see much of the monster because it's supposed to be like in, they were sort of paying tribute to Jaws, saying that you might see the tail, you might see the sort of the fins on his back, quote unquote the fins, and you don't see much of Godzilla. In that sense, that movie didn't work as much because I think it would have benefited the audience if they saw more of Godzilla. But A Quiet Place, you never see the creatures. I don't want to spoil anything, but you the silence is the monster. And the noises you make is the threat. So you don't actually see what you are fearing because it doesn't make any sound. The characters in the film don't make any sound. And you are sort of scared of something you have not seen or heard, and you don't really know what you are afraid of. So I think in that sense, it is like the perfect successor to Jaws in a way.
Yeah, and I think the thing about Godzilla is I agree with you 100%. And I think the reason why we craved so much to see Godzilla in that film is because when Godzilla wasn't on screen, everything else wasn't that interesting.
It was boring.
It was boring. Mm. Whereas in A Quiet Place, you are so invested with this family. Mm. You're so invested in their journey, in how they have built their little life despite the circumstances.
Yep.
And you know, starting it after few hundred days, I believe, I may get the number wrong, but I think that was a stroke of genius because you're straight, you know, tossed into this world that, you know, you're already seeing how this family has adapted. And there are so many soft moments, emotional, tender moments where, you know, that you see the husband and wife dancing together despite, you know, they're using earphones and all these sorts of things, like how the mom is teaching the boy how to do math and all these kinds of small moments that make you care for the family, that small, even the slightest of sounds make you so afraid for them.
Mm-hmm. Mm. And the next movie that we're going to talk about and hear from is actually the opposite of that, because, and it's something that you brought up, Dash, when we were discussing it pre-show. Yeah. It's also one of my favorites. I really, really love District 9. And it does the opposite thing because it completely demystifies the creatures that are in it. They're around. They are, if in many ways, kind of marginalized, they're put upon, and there's precious little mystery to them. I mean, there are still some, and the movie kind of hinges on that, but broadly speaking, they're just kind of walking around in broad daylight. And in that sense, it plays its hand completely differently to the other films that we're discussing.
Yeah, and the reason why I love District 9 so much, it's exactly what you mentioned earlier, Lynn, where the film uses the creatures to tell a completely different story. Because District 9, you can just take it as a surface level entertainment, and even then it works, it's thrilling, it's you know, got great action scenes and all those sorts of things, great character moments. But what District 9 is actually about, it's sort of a commentary, not sort of, it is a commentary on the apartheid era in South Africa, and how, you know, there was this district, I think it was District 6 in, I might get my history a bit wrong there, but where, you know, there was this white only district, and that's what they are using these alien creatures to tell, you know, it's because it's not in your face in terms of the messaging, but it sort of tells this story about xenophobia, about humanity, about social segregation. And as you're watching the film, you start to ponder about the realities. And when you realize what it actually is about, and that, I think it's that much more affecting, and you feel like watching it again and again. And I think it moves you, and it sticks with you so much longer for over the years because of how smart it is and how important the story is.
I think that's also like an interesting point, and maybe we can like explore that once we come back. But most creature features, or good creature features, don't actually use the monsters as villains. And I joked about John Voight just now being the creature in Anaconda, but he is actually the creature in Anaconda. He's the monster, quote unquote. The anaconda is just a snake. It's in its own, you know, its own habitat. They invaded it and it's just doing what normal big snakes would do. Most creature features will sort of shift the spotlight or make the people the villains instead of the creature itself. The creature is just like, in a way, it's just a plot device to further this story and this conflict between like human A and human B and expose them for being the actual monsters in this whole film.
And I think that goes all the way back to what we discussed at the start, which is that we are no longer entranced by monsters. We've seen too many. We can make too many. It just feels easy and cheap, despite it being still expensive. It's just very doable. And so I think as audiences now, we just want the monster to be something, to mean something, you know, and not just to be there for the sake of it, unless we're talking about Anaconda, Piranha, Crawl, that kind of movie. But anyways, we're talking today about creature features. We're about to kind of get into it on a, maybe a more psychological level, some might say. Mm-hmm. But we're starting off by listening to a bit of District 9. We're going to be right back, though. Let us know your favorite creature features. What do you love in this category of film? You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. You can call 7733-2900 and tweet us at BFM Radio.
Yes, yes. We're from MNU. We require your scroll on this eviction notification.
Yes, it's eviction notice.
Put your scroll on the bottom there. See, there's your name at the top. Christopher Johnson.
You're going to another place? A nice new city built especially for prawns?
Special place.
And we're not even going to charge you, okay?
Yeah.
Okay. Seems like we didn't understand each other there properly, eh? Okay.
So you've got a little one there, eh? Do you have a license for that little one?
You said you want to stay. Your boy is coming down with me to child services. He's going to spend the rest of his life in a 1x1 meter box.
Put the gun on him, Thomas.
Hello, little guy. It's the sweetie man coming.
Be free-minded. BFM 89.9.
You're changing, Seth. Everything about you is changing.
Oh, no. What's happening to me? Am I dying?
I want to know what's going on.
What does the disease want?
It wants to turn me into something else.
Oh, no.
A fly got into the transmitter pod with me that first time when I was alone. Don't go back to it.
It could be contagious.
I'm afraid.
Don't be afraid.
No. Be afraid. Be very afraid.
BFM 89.9, it is 8:22. You're listening to Popcorn Culture with Lynn, Arvin, and Dash. And together we're talking about creature features. I didn't realize, but today is a double Jeff Goldblum show, which makes it just a special bonus episode. Because, of course, that was Jeff Goldblum in David Cronenberg's The Fly. And I think that's a nice follow-on, actually, from District 9, because it is kind of that intermeshing of where humans and creatures aren't really that far apart, or in some cases, are you in fact the creature in the film?
Yeah. It's also, I think it's one of the first films that took creature features and thought maybe this can be like a prestige project, or maybe you can, you know, inject some quality into it.
God, it was gross.
It was so gross. It was so, so gross. So I think they didn't slack on the creature part. Like, they completely leaned in, absorbed it like 100%. And I think when he set out to make a creature feature, he didn't pull any punches. So that's The Fly. It is very disgusting to watch. But I think he also approached it in a way where it doesn't have to be a pulpy B-grade film. It doesn't have to be. It can still be low budget, but it has the potential of being something more. Like, it can tell you stories that usually don't appear in most creature features.
And I think that is an interesting point you know, about how that was one of the first sort of prestige creature features, right? Because at that time, I feel most of the creature features like we talked about were all these schlocky stuff. Some of them may be fun, some not so much, but that was generally the parameters in which they operated in. Whereas now, I feel we are getting more and more of these prestige creature features or underrated ones, things you don't really think too much about, things that may not be, you know, huge successes at the box office, but at the same time, they are critical darlings.
So I was thinking in this category of The Host, which was Bong Joon-ho's second film, I think, from 2006. And it is kind of using Again, it's that thing where there is a monster, doubtless. It's coming from the river. It is killing a lot of people. It is quite good at killing. But the monster itself is also emblematic of other things, right? Like government neglect, like interference from other countries. It is a movie that has been seen as quite critical in many ways of governments, you know, the South Korean government, the American government. And I think we go back to what we were saying earlier, which is, on an entertainment level, does it work? Sure, you have all the hallmarks. You know, if you follow the Jurassic Park template that we have newly established, you have an awful lot of it there. But it can also be read in a few different ways. And that's the stuff that you sit with a little bit longer, in the same way that you might for District 9, A Quiet Place, some of the other things, some of the other films that we've been mentioning.
Would you guys want to have more prestige creature features? Or do you want to go back to the B-grade stuff? Because there are not as many B-grade creature features out anymore. They live on streaming services and stuff, and they do quite well. But out in cinemas, it has sort of dwindled over the years. Like, there's not as many. If given the choice, would you guys want to have a lot of prestige creature features, or would you want to have the fun of the B-grade schlocky, don't have to think about it too much, those kinds of creature features? Like Crawl. Like, Crawl is a perfect example.
The thing is, right, the problem, I'm okay with both, right? You want to give me B-grade stuff and all that, that's great. The problem is a lot of the so-called B-grade creature features aren't that good. In terms of, it's not so bad, it's good. It's just a drab, other than Crawl and all that. So on that, in that, you know, regard, I like the so-called prestige films, because one of my, perhaps my favorite creature feature, one of them, you know, other than District 9 and A Quiet Place, is this film that just, I think, went over, like, it was so under the radar, and that is Colossal. And I'm not sure if I'm going to pronounce the director's name right. It's Nacho Vigalondo. And it's this movie about, when, if you want, just watch it in terms of entertainment. It has dark humor. It has, you know, these giant creatures, you know, and there are these big action scenes and all, but not in the same vein as a Godzilla or a Pacific Rim. It's one of those films where when I watched it, I didn't know what I was getting into. I just knew that Anne Hathaway was in it. And so I was like, okay, let's go check it out. Well, you know, what's the worst that could happen? And it was amazing, because it ended up being, without me realizing at first, because I think you only realize it maybe midway through or something. It's not really a spoiler, because I think by now everyone talks about it in that regard. It sort of becomes this commentary on alcoholism. And the way they use the creature to sort of relate it to destruction and alcoholism and how that can be damaging to society, to the things around you. And I think that was, it's superb.
So I just want to see things with imagination is what it comes down to, right? Even if all you're doing is a B-grade movie that is just plummeting towards the bottom, one aiming for the, you know, so bad it's good category, it requires imagination. It requires an understanding of how to up the ante. So I think regardless of whether it's like a prestige creature feature or a schlocky, you know, throwback to the 80s type, all I want is some imagination and an understanding that upping the ante is not just CGI. Because that was my problem with the new run, with the Kong Skull Islands and with the Godzillas, which is that we've seen it. We've seen these movies, you know. At this point, you are just making them prettier. You're just making them shinier and glossier. And that's not what I crave from this. I either want, you know, really interesting storytelling, or I want Piranha 3DD. Just figure it out and give it to me. I don't understand what's so hard. What are people, I understand that, like, people have been weighing in on their favorite creatures. What have they been saying?
So this comes from, let's see, where do we stop? So this comes from John Lim, who says that, talk about The Thing, Sharknado, Starship Troopers, which all three, yeah, good creature features. Then we have a message from Izhas, who says, best creature feature has to be the original summer blockbuster Jaws. Vivekan has an interesting question. He says, sorry, I just tuned in. I don't know if you've covered it already, but what about abstract creature features like Get Out or Us? Both superb films. Feel like we owe them a shout out. I don't think Get Out or Us are creature features.
Yeah, I agree with his last sentence that they are superb films.
They're superb films, yeah.
But I don't know whether they are abstract creature features, because where are there are no creatures at all, not even in terms of, and maybe us. Maybe us a little bit, but maybe, but even then also we're kind of stretching, I feel, because they're sort of doppelgangers rather than, you know, alien creatures sort of thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
I will say, though, Vivigan, that yesterday we spoke about Lovecraft Country. And if you enjoyed both those movies and you like creatures, then I think Lovecraft Country is really right up your alley. It's if you perfect. Haven't seen it already. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't believe I forgot about this, but Morris brought this up. Men in Black, alien and human living together. And Men in Black is a good creature feature.
Yes.
Yeah. Lau says Planet of the Apes, awesome movie. There's also one from Lo who says, is Dobby a creature feature from Harry Potter?
Oh, come on. Guys!
Looks like this is a recurring thing on Supercut.
Yep. Then we can go to like Gollum. And so we have one that says Underwater. So this comes from Jay. Jay says Underwater. Some say it's a ripoff of Alien, but I think it's a better movie. Wow. Wow.
So I've heard this argument before, and I think that it's one that's primarily made on the basis of effects. And I think that like this, not a lot of people are saying it, but I've heard one or two. And I do think that this goes back to something that we've discussed on the show from time to time, which is this idea of when are remakes necessary? You know, when are we increasingly just less able to deal with older movies? Because I would argue Underwater is, if you're not saying inspired by, I think ripoff is not too harsh.
Yeah, yep. I think I believe the same thing. So Luke says, Willard, Hollywood doesn't know how creatures behave. Using Jurassic Park as an example, or any other creature with teeth, they have to strut and roar into the camera. That is so absolutely unnatural and dumb. No predator ever does that, i.e. announces its arrival. I guess. But I guess the camera needs to know where the predator is. Otherwise, we're just looking at like grass or the sky. You know?
And you see, on a similar note, right, talking about realism, because this is not creature features, but you see, Lion King remake, they made it realistic. I don't know if that's a good thing.
Yeah.
The animals have no expressions, you know, things like that. I think, you know, we have to take... Yes, grounded in realism, yes, but there should be some sort of cinematic liberty.
Yep.
You know, when you watch a lot, and any cinema, I think, when you watch Social Network, it's a biopic, but that's not how Mark Zuckerberg is actually in real life, you know. So I think these sorts of things, but it's an interesting point, you know, this realism aspect might, you know, really bother some people.
Maybe.
Yeah, I was going to say that I think if you find yourself distracted by these sorts of things, then the basic fact of it is that the movie is not working for you, right? Because if a movie is working for you, you're not finding yourself thinking like, gosh, what is it with the whole facing the camera thing? You only notice these things when you're not enjoying yourself. So that might be a good indication that creature features as a genre just not for you.
Rebecca says, Sector 7, another movie with an angry sea creature, but for some reason the Koreans excel at making this sort of creature feature. She also names A Quiet Place, Miss Peregrine's Home for Peculiar Children, and my favorite would be kid-friendly movies such as Harry Potter and Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. Fantastic Beasts, maybe. More creatures than Harry Potter, I guess.
It's in the title.
Yeah. Haley says, does Birdemic count as a creature feature? Best, worst, B-grade movie ever. Creature feature isn't about the creature being a threat, but how mysterious those creatures are and how humans still respect the creature despite escaping. Sometimes they forget to show essence of respect to creatures that could potentially kill you with one step. In awe of the creatures, I guess.
I think, yes, that's an interesting thing about how mysterious those creatures are, right? Because we bring up films like, you brought up the whole checkbox thing, Jurassic Park checkbox. And what I think a lot of people, including the Jurassic Park franchise, Jurassic World films, didn't check is how, you know, Steven Spielberg, he built this tension and drama slowly, the way he used his camera angles. In Jurassic Park, if you remember that, the iconic scene where before we see the T-Rex, I believe we see the glass and the water, the ripples of the water in the glass. And you know, these kinds of small moments where even in Jaws, you know, the music, the fin and all that add to the mystery. And you know, compared to a lot like, let's say, Jurassic World, where it's just now, you know, in your face, here's so many
one after the other,
and evolved dinosaurs and super dinosaurs, and they are just like battling each other.
Yeah, so restraint, I guess.
Yes,
like, you know, when you can sort of take a step back and then create suspense and tension and stuff.
Yeah, and I think, you know, for me, when I said imagination earlier, I didn't just mean in the story. I think it's things like that. It's understanding how it is that that a character in the movie would experience the creature in ways other than it is eating my brain right this second, you know? Like, there are other ways to kind of express that. And the glass and the ripple is just the perfect example of, you know, after that, every time something happens and there's a ripple, I'm like, it's here, finally. It's happened.
I'm gonna try to get as many messages as we can because we have a lot. So this comes from Min, who says, Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. Can't really go wrong in the Harry Potter world. We have one from one who says, Hitchcock is an auteur who pushed the horror genre into something that's Oscar-worthy. A lot of directors owe it to him. And I think he named, I believe, a lot of monster feature movies also inspired by Hitchcock's The Birds. In the movie, birds only appear in the end and they are creatures that are not scary to begin with. He also names Bird Box and A Quiet Place with the sky and sound. Hitchcock makes something innocent into something scary. Hitchcock is the master of suspense for a reason. Zarin says, does World War Z come under creature features because he likes it? And finally, Faris says, First Tremors was a fun one that spawned badly.
I will always stand for Tremors. I love Tremors. I don't understand why it works, but I think, you know, in the same way that the glass ripple works, the sand, you know, just the idea of what it is that's under the ground just totally works. There was something that I wanted to say about one of the messages, but I'm forgetting it now. Who was it before Tremors?
World War Z.
So I was thinking about that, but I feel as if zombie movies are entirely their own category.
Yeah, I think so too. That's like more horror. I think it goes under horror
more than creature features. Or if you want to, like, you know, because some of the creature features do come under horror as well, but I think, yeah, it's like Lynn said, it's more of the zombie, because that we can do a whole other show on it, right? Different type of zombie movies and all that. Yeah.
But speaking of which, Joel says Jumanji, especially the monkeys. And Tasha Stalker says, why has no one mentioned Cloverfield? Because it was such a great viewing in the cinema. So Cloverfield is one, it's a good creature feature because it's got a big creature and then it's got like mini, like your typical creatures that you would be, you know, like the alien designs and stuff. So Cloverfield is a decent creature feature. I don't know, but the second one wasn't really...
And that's what I wanted to ask your opinion, Lynn, because Arvin and I were talking about it before we came on air. And when Cloverfield was mentioned, I thought, so does 10 Cloverfield Lane also count as a creature feature? Because the creature is only revealed at the end, but perhaps the presence, its presence, it's felt throughout.
I would argue that that one has the John Goodman, John Voight situation where you have to ask yourself who the actual monster is in the movie. All right, I think we have officially kind of run out of time on the episode. So I just want to end with this. Do you guys want to see more?
Yes. Yes. So I don't mind if they don't show up in the cinema as much. Like I said before, there are a lot of creature features that are showing up on streaming services, on Netflix and stuff. It's kind of, they work in a home setting as well. They are good, like, weekend, be at home, watch it over dinner sort of films. But I don't think I ever want to see creature features stop, because they are extremely enjoyable. And they always come up with weird designs for the monsters. Most times, 5 out of 10 times, the monster designs are underwhelming, but I will still give it a shot because it still has the amount of suspense and excitement, and it's just a fun 90 minutes and a good way to spend your time.
Yeah, same here, because I don't necessarily believe in this whole genre fatigue. The superhero fatigue. It's more about what you do with it. So maybe there is an argument to be made, you know, that certain types of creature features are getting, you know, we are getting desensitized, like we mentioned earlier, to just, you know, big monsters breaking buildings and these sorts of things. But you can come up with interesting things. It's about how you do. We brought up things like, you know, District 9, A Quiet Place. I read some articles where I'm not sure whether this counts as a creature feature, but perhaps there's an argument to be made. You know, things like Babadook and even It Follows and all sorts, where the creature is more of an, it means something. something else. You know, it's a metaphor for something else.
Yep.
And I think as long as you play with the genre, and even if you want to make a schlocky one, I'm all in. Like, as long as it's, you know, you go, you make a good one like Crawl, or you make such a total trash film that it's so fun to
watch. Anaconda.
Like Anaconda.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm all in for the schlocky ones that are so bad they're good. I live for those movies. I guess my thing is, I would like to see our King Kong. And I don't mean another King Kong. I don't mean King Kong done for the fourth time just to make it look better. I want our generation's creature that is going to last for decades from now, where they're going to be remaking this one, the one that kind of defines what it means to be a creature feature in the 2000s. And I don't think we have that yet. We just keep remaking stuff, or we're making indie things, or we're making schlocky things. And so I just want to imagine what our version, our true Godzilla, King Kong, Jaws might be. I don't know what that is, but it's exciting to think that there might be somebody working on that. So we're going to be closing off on a director who, like we said earlier, has done so very much with this particular form, who has really innovated it in many different ways. And that is just a little snippet of Guillermo del Toro's Shape of Water. Again, if you would like to tell us your favorite creature features, keep them coming. We love recommendations. WhatsApp is 018-789-8899. Tweet us at BFM Radio. Write to us at movies@bfm.my. And you can also find us on both Twitter and Instagram at BFM Popcorn.
The loneliest thing you've ever seen. Well, you just said it, right? You just said it. You called it a thing. It's a thing. It's a freak. All right, I will repeat it to you. All that I am, all that I've ever been, brought me here to him. When he looks at me, the way he looks at me, he does not know what I lack or how I am incomplete.
Eliza, there's... Oh, all right. What are we? What are you and I? Do you know what we are? We're nothing. Nothing. We can do nothing.
Oh, God, it's not even human.
God. What?
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.